War, terrorism, politics, murder, car chases, trials, shark attacks. 24-hour TV news has exploded in our faces, altering how news is gathered and reported, and how world leaders and you receive and use news. Neither journalism nor reality will ever be the same. The story of Feeding the Beast is the story of a pop culture revolution, the ultimate reality show. 24-hour news, the good, the bad, and the inevitable.
And joining us right now at PMP Network is Linda Ellaby. I remember first seeing her on a show called NBC News Overnight. She was a great news person and was a unique individual and was a little bit different than you'd see in different channels. I liked her. And it's really interesting to note that my kids now like her because of Nick. They watch Nick all the time, and she does the Nick News. So the cycle has continued. And Linda's going to be doing a couple of things coming up. One of them I saw and I loved it. It's called Feeding the Beast, the 24-hour news revolution. It's going to be on Monday night at 9 o'clock on Trio. And then there's something else going on, too, as well. She's hosting The Legacy of Slavery on Nick News with Linda Ellaby on February 15th at 8:30 p.m. So you can check that out. But it's interesting about this 24-hour news thing because I noticed that they have so much time to fill up that they throw in anything they can. They don't check their figures and their stats, and it's just a wildness out there. It's like the frontier again. Hello?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was waiting for a question. Was that a question?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes and no, it is. And you're quite right. Part of the problem is that 24-hour news was from the beginning driven by technology. And the technology gave us the ability to go live from anywhere, so these channels were born, and now they have to fill 24 hours, and the trick is always, it's easy to know what to put on when there's a war. What do you put on when there is no war?
Right.
So we've discovered The Trial, a soap opera.
Right.
That works very well. If that doesn't work, you can try elevating a local story into a national story, like Lacey Peterson, a tragic murder, but a local story. That is now a national story.
Just like the girl in Florida.
And sometimes, as the people in the documentary that work in 24-hour news say, sometimes facts get lost in the heat to get everything on quick and to get so much on.
Well, the situation with a young girl in, I believe it was in Florida, whose kidnapping was captured on videotape. Was that in Florida?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, that was another one, a local story that became national news.
Yes.
In the 24-hour thing. The other thing is that you talk about war. War has always been great to cover on the news, but this time they embedded the reporters with the troops.
Yes, creating a kind of interesting Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah.
In that, and again, this is not me saying it, this is the people in the documentary. You know, when you are so close to the story, when you are living with the soldiers, is your objectivity compromised? Occasionally, yes.
Hmm.
There was a heat during the Iraq War by all of the 24-hour networks to sort of, who could see be the biggest patriot? You know, our flag is bigger than your flag graphic. Our people are more patriotic than your people.
Well, that's true, but some of them covered it in a different way, though, outside the embedded zone.
Absolutely.
There were some
good reporting that went on. Again, it is, you know, you can't take all of 24-hour news any more than you can just take all of television news and paint it with one brush.
I think that the 24-hour news, there's some great things about it, in the fact that you always have information at your fingertips.
The fact that it's there when you want it is clearly the biggest advantage to 24-hour news, and we have gotten used to that. It's not going to go away. What it's going to morph into, I don't know. I believe it to be the mother of all reality programming because of our appetite for live. And interestingly enough, the final question in the documentary is, just who is the beast? This 24-hour Magilla that must be fed, or the viewer with our voracious appetite for live? But it's clear. And what's it going to take to keep feeding this beast? What, you know, the more bored we get, the more jaded we get. What are we going to have to see? Live traffic accidents, live murders? What? I don't know.
Well, I think that, you know, the tabloid sensationalism that's permeated the primetime networks with reality shows and things like this, one day will lead up to programming like watching someone get electrocuted. I think that's coming.
I think it may well be coming. I also, once again, I really, you know, want to say that within this framework, I'm glad 24-hour news is there. Somebody in the documentary says that if CNN had been there during the Vietnam War probably wouldn't have lasted more than 3 years. I think that's probably true. Certainly, 24-hour news was responsible for changing U.S. policy toward Bosnia. There are any number of incidents where the simple presence of 24-hour news has changed the world for the better in one way or another.
Well, it's interesting that what's happened with the 24-hour news, with CNN being more leaning toward the left and Fox News leaning toward the right, there's become a balance.
You said that, I didn't.
Well, yeah, there's become a balance just from the political leanings of the different networks.
Well, you know, I really would more describe it as today, the viewer sort of has the responsibility of assembling his or her own jigsaw of truth. I'm not sure you could say, well, I believe this network, or I don't believe this one, or I agree with this one, or I agree with that one. There may be people within a network whose work you admire, or whom you believe are telling the truth. Or there may be one simple program you trust. It's really putting a burden of responsibility on the viewer that was never there before.
Yeah, a lot of this we have to trace back to Ted Turner, who said to you in the special that he really wanted to do this as a sign of adventure, like Lewis and Clark. But he really put his hand on something that was so creative and so
unheard
of. There's
no question that he was a visionary, and you can trace this whole thing back to him. And there is no question that when he started, every one of us who worked in the broadcast networks called it chicken noodle news. And that's what we believed it was and would stay. And we kept on believing that through the, we tried to hang on to that through the Reagan assassination attempt when 24-hour news beat the networks, through the shuttle Challenger explosion when the networks had stopped covering space shots because they said nothing ever happened. And then the point where we had to stop believing it was the first Gulf War, because CNN owned that story. And at that point, the broadcast networks had to look around and say, we have to take this seriously.
Hmm. Do you think the broadcast networks have dedicated enough to news themselves, or are they kind
of... No, absolutely not. Excuse me, a half-hour program in prime time for news? No. It's impossible, or damn near, to explain what happened on a day in half an hour.
Well, of course,
especially not if you have to give time to Lacey Peterson and Michael Jackson's latest woes and Janet Jackson's latest woes.
Well, that's one of the things that really bothers me about news, and not only national news, but local news. Out here, the Fox station, every night on the news, will interview one of the people from a Fox show as part of the newscast.
The Today Show does the same thing.
It's very diluted when you do that.
Yes, it is diluted, and we don't have enough time to dilute. If you have 24 hours, you can dilute that way. If you have a half hour on an evening newscast, I personally really would rather know about other things.
Yeah, I mean,
but that's only me personally. On the other hand, you know, as I point out in the documentary, on the day they arrested Michael Jackson, and I looked around, I couldn't find anybody in my company. As I say, I have about 50 employees, and I found them all in the conference room watching television, watching 24-hour news of the arrest. Now, the fascinating thing about this was that there was nothing on the screen but a door. The door he had gone through at the police station. And everybody was standing and staring at that door. Now, and I joined them. Now, why were we staring? Because that door was live, even though nothing was happening. So, you know, I can't exclude myself from this.
And, of course, many of us, including myself, sat and watched a white Bronco drive down the street one
night. That's right. In a very low-speed chase.
Yes. And I'll never forget that. I mean, I watched that over an hour, and you say to yourself afterwards, what did I just spend an hour watching?
That's right.
But yet it was fascinating.
And yet it was fascinating in ways that we don't seem to find Shakespeare fascinating, or long discussions about foreign policy or the economy.
It's amazing. Tell me a little bit about, you have a personal relationship with your partner at the company that you formed.
Yes.
Lame Duck.
Lucky
Duck. Lucky Duck Productions.
That's better than Lame Duck.
Not Lame Duck. No, that's George Bush I'm thinking of. Lucky Duck Productions. And tell me a little bit about how you met him. And,
well, Ralph Kessem is my partner in life and in work. We met oh gosh, back in 1975, when I was a reporter in Washington for NBC News, and he was a cameraman in Washington for ABC News. And we were friends for many years, and then we worked together, and then we started Lucky Duck Productions, and then after all those years, we fell in love.
So you were actually working with him as a partner at Lucky Duck before you had a relationship with him otherwise?
Yes.
Isn't that weird, huh?
It really is. And I must say that all these years later, it turns out to have been a wonderful idea.
Well, they always say that you should be friends with someone before you get married or whatever. So
I think for us, it's proof.
That's interesting. Now, were you?
It works for us. You know, it might not work. Living and together and working, owning a company together, might not work for everybody. I would think if it didn't work, it would be an indescribable daily hell.
When you went through your breast cancer, and I know you're a survivor, were you married at that point to him?
No. Ralph and I have never married.
No, okay.
We have been together all these years, and we were together then, but we've never married.
Okay. So, but you were together then, though?
Yes.
So he went through this whole
Absolutely.
Thing with you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. How
and
important was
on
it
my,
there?
On my 50th birthday, he has a little country house in Massachusetts, and for my 50th birthday gift, he had a field of daffodils planted. Because he said in his card that he knew I'd be alive and be there every spring to see them.
Wow, and of course daffodils are one of the things that the American Cancer Society uses to raise money as well.
Yes.
Wow, that's kind of nice, huh?
Yeah, I find that extremely appealing.
Well, I can see why. You know, it's interesting. You know, I think you did what you should have done, and that is to get out of that whole news thing that was happening because of all the trappings and things that they make you do.
Well,
to
that's
fit
true,
their
and I feel the same way. I really do. I feel like that I got to be part of it at its best when the pressure for news to make money was nothing like it is today. When nobody questioned what we spent to get stories, to find information. And nobody said, well, will this news sell? So I did. I had a great time, and I don't regret a minute of it, and I'm really glad to be out of the dailiness of it. I'm glad to not work for anyone but myself these days.
I have very good friends who were news anchors who eventually got sick of the fact that they were told how their hair had to be, how their makeup had to be, what they had to say, where they had to appear, where they had to do, And the fact of getting the news or doing news was kind of sublimated to all these other things that they had to do for marketing.
Well, that was true even when I was there. I mean, I had a number of bosses who never commented on my work, but I never worked for anyone who didn't comment on my hair. I think that was, particularly if you were a woman, that's always been part of it. And even people who watch you, more often than not, before they say, I like your work, they'll say, I like or don't like your hair.
See, that would really annoy me.
Well, it can be a little annoying, yeah.
Because, you know, if people send it to me, usually they say they don't comment on what I look like because I'm on the radio.
That's right. You have that benefit.
But I now have been doing a TV show in Boston since November, and now people will quote to me, hey, you know, why are you wearing those glasses? You know, how come your hair looks different? It's kind of weird, you know?
Yes.
You would think they'd say, hey.
I used to have old ladies come up to me on the street and say, you're such a sweet thing. Why don't you get that hair out of your face so we can see your forehead? And I thought, it's my mother again.
How did you
Linda Jane, get those bangs out of your eyes.
Linda, how did you connect with Nick News? I think that's a great thing that you're doing that.
You know, that was a total accident. I had started a production company, and the Gulf War started, and Jerry Laybourne, the woman who was one of the founders of Nickelodeon and was president of it, called me, and she said that she was very much afraid that because of the 24-hour news channels, you know, because of the fact that the Gulf War news was everywhere, that kids couldn't avoid it. And she felt they were getting a lot of misinformation and that American kids' anxieties were very high. And could I produce a show to try to explain the Gulf War to kids and lower their anxieties? And I told her the truth. I'd never produced anything for kids. I didn't know anything about producing for kids. And she said, well, that's okay. We don't know anything about news. So let's do it. And we did it. And that was the beginning of Nick News.
I think that it's a great thing to do. But, you know, something, it concerns me. When September 11th happened, my kids, I have a son, 12, and a daughter, 9. took that so much to heart. They were scared. My daughter especially was scared of Osama when he was going to come in over here and hurt us. And when they read or hear from their friends about kids getting kidnapped and killed, and it's very, very frightening to these children. And there's got to be something out there to kind of calm them down.
Well, that's what we try to do.
Exactly.
I mean, that's exactly the purpose of Nick News. Because the sad part is we know they can't avoid hearing about it. After September 11th, which you just mentioned, because we've been doing Nick News now, we're in our 13th year, because we're so tied in with teachers groups and schools around the country, we were able to get on the phones. And within the first 3 days, we couldn't find a single child over 6 years old who had not seen pictures of those planes going through those buildings.
Right.
So to say, well, we're just not going to talk about it, it didn't happen, is not an option.
No.
Interestingly enough, when we went on the air with our show, you know, for kids about that almost instantly, the very first thing I said was, no matter how many times you've seen those pictures, that video, please remember it only happened the one time.
Right.
And that was an important thing to say instantly, because the message that TV conveys is the over and overness of something.
Right.
Particularly on 24-hour news. You know, just by showing it again and again and again, the effect is doubled. You know, for example, in the 24-hour news documentary, we talk about when Bob Dole was running for president and he fell off the stage. Now, he's a healthy guy, but because 24-hour news was there and had the tape of him falling, they ran it forever. Did it affect his chances? Well, quite possibly. Interestingly enough, I have gone into this back in this week to add the scream, the Howard Dean scream right there.
Uh-huh.
Same thing.
Yeah.
It was played over and over and over again.
And not only that, it was used with music behind it. And,
exactly.
You know, everybody used it.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's amazing to me, the whole thing of news, and I'm expecting another book from you.
I am working on one.
Good. Because I really loved And So It Goes.
Well, I'm glad you liked it.
That was a great... I never read Move On, but I did read And So It Goes, and I really liked that book.
Well, I hope you'll like the third one.
What is the third one going to be about?
It's about sort of a byproduct of 30 years of traveling the world as a journalist. It's sort of about being on the road. It's about travel and food and memories.
Sounds good.
Three things that I enjoy very much. And within that, of course, there's a great deal about news.
Yeah, of course. It permeates into everything, right?
Well, it is what I do.
Mm. Now, my dog Lucy told me to tell you to say hi to Ollie and Daisy.
Oh, well, Ollie and Daisy say hi right back to Lucy.
Okay. And good luck with the show. Again, you can actually see Linda two times this coming
Sunday night and Monday night.
Yes. Sunday night, she will be on Nick at Night at 8:30 with Nick News with Linda Ellaby, The Legacy of Slavery. And then on Monday night, she will be on Trio with the documentary Feeding the Beast at 9 o'clock. So you'll get your fill of Linda Ellaby. Thank you so much for coming on.
You're very welcome.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.